Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let's give a rousing Tulare County welcome to our warm-up speaker, Linda.
Got my time right. Okay. Hi, I'm Linda, and I am an alcoholic. First and foremost, thank you, Debbie, my friend, for asking me to be your 10-minute speaker. We call each other Dumb and Dumber. But that's the joy and fun of being sober today. I get to have real true friends, and there's a lot of women in this room that are true friends of mine today that I trust and love, and really, it's just a great thing. I'm going to really try to keep this simple, like I've been taught, keep it simple, short, and sweet. I started out drinking at 14 years old, pretty normal age, I guess, and, you know, I didn't think anything about getting drunk on an 8th grade graduation dance, no big deal, you know, I mean, everybody did it, but anyway, and in high school, I just did the normal, go into games, get drunk, good student, you know, average, and my drinking really started after high school. I met the man of my dreams that I was going to marry, and because number one, he was Portuguese, and I always knew my dad wanted me to marry a Portuguese guy, and anyway, that relationship introduced me to the outside enhancement, and my drinking really took off. Put those two together, and I was rolling, and loving life, just enjoying it, partying, and living at home. I had a job, and my mom and dad paid for my gas and my insurance, and I was spoiled rotten. I was a daughter. I had four sisters, and I was the baby of the four, so I was considered the spoiled one. Got away with murder, you know. They didn't get to do the things that I got away with, and I heard about that growing up. And anyway, so this relationship took off, and that's where it went. And you many of you know what I'm talking about. And in between that relationship, which was 7 years, my mom really was worried about me. She was like, "What is wrong with you? You know, she said, "There's something wrong with you." And this is not like right away. I mean, she was happy I was with him. And then before you know it, I was staying out late. I wasn't coming home. I wasn't calling. I didn't care. It was just about this big party that we were in our lives. And anyway, I even tried to commit suicide over this guy. Because of stupid stuff, anyway. And I, my mom and dad, my dad didn't know a lot of things that I did. And that's because my mom kept a lot from him. And that relationship, by the grace of God, I know that today, I ended it even after getting engaged, and I thought that was the right thing to do, and it was really all about making sure that I was going to make my daddy proud, and that was the first time I ever saw my dad cry. But I moved on, and within 1 year, probably about a year after that, I met someone from here. So I thought, you know, this is a good change in my life. I need to get away from my old school and my old town. And I moved to Tulare in 1987, got married, and do the geographical move. And within the first year of my marriage, I had a job, and the people I worked with were perfect because they drank, and they drank after five. And one day I went on this lunch 4 hours, and the boss who drank, and it was a company person, and so I was going to lose my job. I was with the boss, but I ended up having a blackout. Didn't know what a blackout was until I got here. And that was pretty devastating because I really got drunk and I had to be driven home, and it was pretty embarrassing. And I remember the next day going to that work, and I was so embarrassed because I said some things and done some things to some other associates within that office. And anyway,
they laughed. They said, "Oh, you were so funny, Mama." And I remember feeling that, just devastated. So at that time, he thought, well, you know what? Maybe there is a little drinking problem. And I thought, well, maybe there is. I don't know. Takes me over to NCADD. And, you know, I get there. And I get this, meet this blonde little, she'd be bopping around. And it happened to be, where's Dimitri? It's Dimitri. There she is, right there. And she takes me to this meeting. And she lived in Tipton. And she says, I'll pick you up. And she takes me to the Alana Club. And I walked in there, and I'm like, hell no. I am so not one of you people. And no, I just got a bad taste in my mouth, and I just said, forget it. I am not doing this. And I continued to drink. And fast forward, that was in 1988, I think, because I got married in 87, and this was within 1 year. So fast forward, in a lot of things happened in there. I mean, I drank with these people. I continued to drink, but I kind of started hiding it. And then I thought, you know what? I probably need to switch, and I'm going to start drinking beer, because beer will not get me as drunk. And so I switched to just drinking beer. And you know, I love barbecues, and I was a bar girl. I love bars. I did not drink at home alone. I'm sorry to those that drink alone. Nothing, no offense to you, but I could not drink alone. I love to drink around people, and I love to pick up the phone at 2 o'clock, and you know, it's called dial, drink and dial, you know, and it was like an adrenaline, like, okay, can't stop now. And there was no other enhancements going on here. So, and then anytime that I could get away and go to the coast, you know, get away from him. And this time too, I have two kids, and you know, I kind of slowed down during that time. Of course, I didn't drink during pregnancy, and neither did I didn't smoke even during pregnancy. But anyway, so I would take off and go on the girl trips to the coast, and I made it. I've done some things there that you know, you think you're not going to see people from Tulare when you go to the coast. Yeah, right, huh? Anyway, and then they get back that the husband would say, so you were over there at the summit. What'd you drink, or how many did you drink? I go, oh, I had just a couple, you know. Well, who'd you dance with? And I'm like, damn, I just danced with the girls. Well, that's not what I heard. I heard it was with so-and-so, and you were just like all over him. And I'm like, oh my God, no. You know, it was just constant. That I love the bars. Anyway, my dad passes away. The number one man in my life passes away in 2000. And I at that time, I drank more. I remember at his funeral celebrating with wine and saying, here's to you, Daddy, you know, here's to you, here's your little Portuguese red wine. And that's when it really took off. And I just went off on this. I didn't think I had a problem, though. Because I didn't drink in the morning. And, you know, I just got to that point where I couldn't. It was like the buzz was not good enough for me. I had to take it to the extreme. And my mother-in-law who watched my kids quite often, she finally said, let me back up 1 minute. My husband then said, you know, If I can't beat this and I can't make her get sober, I'm going to let her join me. So he would let me go sit with him at the golf course at 5 o'clock, and then he'd look at his clock and say, you got to get home, pick up those kids, you got to go to my mom's. And one night I was told that I need to go get the kids. I get a phone call and his mom says, you guys are both got a drinking problem. And my first thought was, yep, see, you got a problem. See, you got a problem. I don't. You're drinking too much. And then that's kind of when I had enough inside of me that there had been some things that happened on a trip, and I kind of vomited out a little bit of like a night and made a little, and he was devastated. So I contacted a counselor, and the counselor said, well, you've got some choices here. And I was scared. And she said, you have three choices. You can go to 30-day rehab. You can go to an outpatient here in Visalia, or you can go to AA. And I said, oh, no, I can't do AA. I said, I did that already. And so I got into an outpatient. And part of the outpatient requirement is you must go to 12. Oh, you must go to AA meetings. And I just told my counselor, I said, why? Why can't I just do this deal here and you know, get my certificate? She said, it doesn't work that way. You are required to go to AA. And my first AA meeting was the noon meeting here in Tulare at Jim Street Church. And I saw a bunch of people that I knew, and I was devastated. I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, I know him, I know her. And it was me and the guys, but anyway. And Ty, I'll never forget, Ty said, hey, he said my last name. He goes, he noticed. He goes, what are you doing here? He goes, are you one of us? And I go, I don't know. I just was scared. And that was the beginning of my recovery. And I did the deal. And what I know today, if it wasn't for doing the deal, taking the suggestions from you people in AA, getting that sponsor, working my steps out of this book, and going to meetings, and finding a higher power, that's the biggest thing. Because when I got here, I knew God, because I'd gone to church growing up, and I had that God. But the God that I knew was punishing. I was going to hell for all the shit that I did, and I was taking a lot of stuff to my grave. But I learned here that I have a God that's loving, forgiving, and I am so grateful for that. Today, I have relationships. I have the most wonderful relationship with my mother. I feel very blessed for that. I have relationships with my kids. I even have relationships today with Ron, who's now my ex-husband. I got divorced in sobriety after 5 years. And, you know, those are things that I never even imagined would ever happen. It's just the miracles that happen here are beyond my imagination. Never thought that I could have me, I could have Linda, and I could learn to love who Linda is today, and I can be honest and kind and tolerant. I still have those character defects, but you know, I learned today that I can pick up the phone and I can talk to somebody, and you know, somebody can say, well, this is what you need to do, or just listen to me. You know, that's the gift of Alcoholics Anonymous in my eyes. So anyway, I'm just grateful that God brought me to AA, and AA brought me to my God, my understanding. And welcome, Jody. I hope you find what I have found here. And you also, to the other newcomer, welcome. And thank you. And God bless everybody.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let's give a warm Tulare County welcome to our featured speaker, Debbie.
Thank you. thank you, Rick, for inviting me to do this. And I am so nervous. I don't know if I can talk for 2 hours, but I'll try. Don't get worried. I want to thank you, Linda, for coming tonight before me. You're before me in the program, and it's been a blessing to me to have you as my friend, as well as so many ladies in here too, like you said. I'm really thankful for that, and I'm grateful that God knows exactly who to give me in my life, you know, and I'm grateful that he didn't meet you and me up sooner. This would be like a movie of Thelma and Louise. So, okay. I'm Debbie. I'm an alcoholic, what is it like for me? Okay, I grew up in a family that looked pretty normal. You know, if you drove by our house, you'd see nice house, nice car. a dad, a mom, little girl, little boy, and a dog. So it looked pretty normal on the outside, but on the inside, it felt not right. My dad was an alcoholic, and I believe that I'm one of those people that come by this genetically. I know everybody doesn't agree with that, but, you know, it was on both sides of my gene pool. And I used to hear him talking about my uncle that was the drunk, and they were making jokes about it being in the family and whatnot. And they were always thinking that it would skip a generation, so the kids wouldn't get it. Well, it didn't ever skip a generation in my family, because even my kids have it. So I hope I don't have to save seats for all my grandkids, but we'll see about that. You know, I don't know. And I'm grateful to know that if I do, Alcoholics Anonymous will be here. You know, this program saved my life. I grew up really always kind of feeling a little bit different, you know. I think I was addicted to things before I ever became, you know, personality things, things before alcohol. I was addicted to people pleasing, and I was addicted to attention seeking, and I was addicted to just odd behaviors. You know, I mean, I would do things to get attention that I thought would get me attention from my dad. He was not the dad that I wanted, you know, and he wasn't the dad like all my other friends had either. He was a good provider, and we went on nice vacations, we lived well, we had all the things we needed, you know, and some of the things we wanted, but he just was one of those dads that if he did come home for dinner, we never knew what he was going to come through the door like, what version was it going to be, and he seemed to like to pick on me a lot, you know, and I have one brother, and I can remember that sometimes at the dinner table that my brother and I would get giggling, and he would get so mad at us, and he would send us away from the dinner table for laughing, you know. And my mom, she just would kind of sit there, and I don't know. I've learned a lot about my family from AA, you know, and the opinion that I grew up with, you know. I felt like my mother was one of those ladies that wouldn't stick up for herself, and she would never really stand up to my dad, or she wouldn't have an opinion too much on anything. And so I made up my mind really early in life that I wasn't going to be like my mom. There was going to be no man that was going to treat me like he treated her. Thus, the apple that the tree that the apple didn't fall from. You know, I didn't turn into my mom, I turned into him. You know, and that was, I got all of his bad things. You know, I got all of his sarcasm, his criticism, his insensitivity, the no emotion, you know. And, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I found out that, you know, I had been really full of fear as a little girl. I was a restless kid, you know, and I found out I was a very insecure teenager, and I grew up and I was a very discontent young woman. You know, and my story, I don't have in my story an early start on the drinking. It was just about my thinking, and it was about my behavior. So when I was 16 years old, I got married. And I was a junior in high school, and I was pregnant. So that was about the worst thing I did. I didn't do the drinking and all of that stuff. You know, that was in 1967, so I'm sure stuff like that was going on, but I wasn't doing that. I just had the need to have somebody love me. So, got the boyfriend, got doing stuff we shouldn't do, and 1 year and one day after we met, we got married. We got married in Visalia. I won't never forget that day. On Noble, there was a little pink house there. I think there was a, there used to be a drive-in there or something, but it was like a little Justice of the Peace house. And we went in there and we sat down while we got married. It was a real shindig. And when we got finished there, my mom and dad and me and my husband and his parents went to Estrada's. Do you guys remember that restaurant? We went there and we had our celebration lunch. You know, and that was it. We went home and life took on, and we went back to school, and they told us at school, we'll let you keep coming to school if you will not make a spectacle of yourself. Because back then, that wasn't really the cool thing to do, you know. So we said, okay, and about 5 months into that pregnancy, I had started having complications, and I had a miscarriage. And my dad said that we were going to have the marriage annulled. And we said, no, we don't want you. I didn't want to have that marriage annulled. I wanted to be in that family. Those people treated me like I felt like I loved. They took us places they went, the out to dinner, they have family dinners. They didn't have any boys. They only had, I mean, they only had boys, they didn't have no girls. So, of course, you know, I was at my best because all the attention was on me, you know. And that was fine, and then they said, don't get pregnant again for about a year because this could possibly be some kind of cancer, and they weren't sure, but it wasn't. And so we waited, and we moved to Fresno, and my husband went to City College, and I finished high school up there at a continuation school. And I don't really say that too much to anybody, but, you know, it's funny, in AA, there's two other people that graduated from that same high school in Fresno. And I'm like, what? You know, because it was, that was weird to me. But small world. Anyway, we lived up there. He went to school. We came back to Porterville, and he got a job and started working. And those people were really nice to Frank. They liked us. They were probably in their 40s, and it was kind of like a older brother and sister would take us in, you know, and they were nice people. And he got killed in a car accident, so that left my husband without a job. And by then, him and my dad were friends, so they went into business together. And it was a grocery store, and it required early hours and late hours, and because of my dad being an alcoholic, he couldn't open the store because he was too hungover. He couldn't close because he'd get drunk by 2 and start running all the people off. So Frank was gone a lot, and now by now, we have 2 little girls. They're the same age for a week, so I stayed home all the time with these 2 little babies. And you know what? That was fine with me. I liked that. We really did have a little house with a picket fence, you know. And I was fine with that for about 5 years. And then I got the rids. The restless, irritable, and discontent set in on me. And I thought, you know what? This is not what I signed up to be. This is not right. He's always working. When he's not working, he's not paying me enough attention. It's all about him and his friends, or it goes off with my dad. And, you know, I had this feeling of being not loved again, you know. And so my best thinking got me playing softball. And there I met the man of my dreams, and started having an affair. That guy was 10 years older than me. He was married. He wore a suit and tie to work, and he went to work 8 to 5, and he looked really good in his baseball uniform. I thought he was going to be the one to fix me. You know, that was going to be my hero and take me and my little girls, and we were going to have a good life. And he had 2 little boys, and so, you know, I really kind of had that thing about the Brady Bunch in my head. You know, all be happy ever after. Well, I had an older cousin, and she knew him because she'd gone to school with him, and she said, you know what, Debbie, she said, you're not the first person he's done this with. And I'm like, what? No, he's had this before going on, and I'm like, No, you know. And of course, in my mind, well, I don't care. He had me now, what, he would be fine. I ignored all those signs and all of that, you know, warning that I had, and I was gonna make that right for the wrong reasons. That was my life. I was always making the right choice for the wrong reasons, you know, just to make it look right or just to make it feel right. And you know, Dr. Phil has that saying, if they'll do it with you, they'll do it to you. And he did. So it wasn't all that I thought it was. And I was kind of glad that happened, though, because then I could get out of that marriage, because I really didn't like him after about 6 months. You know, I didn't like that church guy. He was too way boring for me. He didn't even know how to have any fun. And by then, you know, with the softball and stuff, there was some beer drinking going on, and that was kind of fun. I kind of started liking that. But he was just such a puss, you know, that he, well, oh, I shouldn't say that. But anyways, we got a divorce, and by now I had gone through beauty school, and I was working in that hair salon, party time, it was on, you know. I don't know what it is about that industry, but I hear a lot of people say they've been a hairdresser and they started having fun. And I did, and it seemed normal, you know. But I was a single mom, so I had to kind of, you know, manage my working, because then, you know, that meant getting babysitters, and that meant, you know, trying to be the responsible person, when really, in my heart of hearts, honestly, I didn't get the mother gene. I didn't want to take care of those kids like I should. I wanted to run around and party. And I was fine with working. I didn't care about working. Actually, I could always make a living. I could just never make a life, you know, no matter what I did. I'm going to speed up here because there's two more husbands I can tell you about, but we're going to move on. So, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Anyway, I did. I got married two more times. That made four. And then I was really thinking about this the other day, too, and I haven't said this out loud in a meeting, I don't think, but in between those marriages, there were two live-in relationships, too. So I know we're not counting that, but Helen right up there with Betty, what's her name? Elizabeth Taylor. You know. And you know, really, honestly, I have to tell you the truth, that if either one of those guys would have asked me to marry him, I would have. They didn't. Anyway, I found to be the kind of alcoholic that liked to party. It was fun. I did have a lot of fun. It didn't start out really being much more than social drinking, you know. It just seemed to be the right thing to do, and it was normal. And it, you know, I worked hard, and I felt like I should play hard. And I felt justified with all of that, you know, that I was entitled to that. You know, I took care of things. I didn't need anybody to take care of me. And, you know, my poor kids, they don't tell it like I do. I think sometimes I'm my worst enemy. I know I am. But they say, Mom, I don't know why you think that, because it really wasn't like you think it was. But I know how I feel inside about guilt and the regrets, you know. And I don't have a lot of regrets about the things I did. Mostly mine is about what I didn't do. You know, you always hear them, people say, oh, you do it the best you can when you're doing it, and when you can do it better, you will. Well, I don't know if I did it the best I could. I think I did it the best to my willingness. I just wasn't very willing, because that wasn't what I wanted to do. But, you know, somehow they grew up, and they started acting up. And then that's when I got mad at them, because, you know, that made me look bad. And, of course, then, you know, the remarks again, well, no wonder they act like that, but who's their mother, you know? So, again, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, you know. But I changed careers in 91, and I stopped... I quit doing hair, and I quit doing a grocery checking. And I got my real estate license, and I started on a career, and I landed a really, really good job. And, you know, I wasn't married to husband number four yet. But he had made me a bet in 1988. That was a good year, wasn't it? And he said, you know what, I'm going to bet you $1,000 that you can't stay not drinking for 1 year. And I said, well, I'll take the bet. Well, I took the bet and I won the money. And then I stayed sober for 3 more years. And I'm talking no smoking, no drinking. No, I didn't even eat a hamburger. I went totally on the health kick, you know. But I didn't have AA, and I didn't have a God in my life. I just had that stubborn self-will that I was going to show him. You know, I was going to turn into the woman that he would eventually marry. So I convinced him after about the second year, after I'd landed that good job, you know what, it's time for us to get married. It's time again for another marriage. And we did. We went and got married. And we got divorced in 1 year. Because that 4 years of untreated alcoholism with no God and no AA was the longest 4 years of my life. I can tell you right now, nothing changed in my life except I wasn't drinking. I'm still thinking. I was still, you know, selfish, self-seeking, self-serving, and nobody was doing anything as well as I could do it. So it made it really unpleasant, and we got divorced. And that went on and on and on and on and on and on and back and forth. And he had somebody and I had somebody and back together. And it was just the biggest mess you've ever seen. And I've learned a thing in here. It might be an Al-Anon thing. Sometimes the things you let go of are more important when you let go of them than when you're hanging on to them. And I really do believe that. That was the case with that. You know, I had to just... And even in sobriety, I had to sign up for some more of it, you know. I mean, I was always getting in the ring with him. I don't know why. I just wanted to, you know. But anyway, that got over with, and I don't know, you know. My last drunk, honestly, I did a lot of crazy things when I was drinking, I have to say. And Linda talks about the drinking dial and the... For me, it was drunken internet dating. So if any of you have done that a few years ago and you saw Crazy Debbie on there, that was me. You know, because I thought it was good to be called Crazy Debbie. Why would you want to do that? Who would want to date a Crazy Debbie? Crazy people. Yeah. And, I mean, it was totally insane. My brother got so mad at me one time. I took off on a New Year's Eve, and I went up to see this man up somewhere by Monterey. And he had a website. He was all that in a bag of chips, you know, because that's who I deserved. And... I got up there. I had to go through about 3 gates to get to where he lived. And it was a beautiful place, I have to say. It was still daylight when I got there, thank God. But what a weirdo. And thank God he had this wine cellar. Well, I'm not a wine girl. I'm a whiskey girl. So I only had a couple glasses of wine. And by the time the dinner was cooked and we went in to watch this TV that was probably as big as that opening over there, he kept flicking through the channels, and what he kept stopping on was not going to be what I was watching. And I got up, I go, what? Gotta go, I don't want to get in that New Year's Eve traffic. And I came home all that way, and I got lost over there on that 5 or whatever it was, and I cut across there to get, I was just looking for a sign for any town that I knew that would be by Celia. Kalinga. That was fine enough for me. And I went through there in the dark, and in the, it was snowing, and it was I was so scared. And I was so thankful that I'd only had two glasses of wine, because if I'd have been driving on that drunk, I don't even know, you know. But see, that's how I know that God was always watching out for me. And I know that all the things that have evolved in my life are for a reason, you know, and I'm right where I need to be, no matter if I like it or not. And no matter if the story is pretty or not. That's just how it is. You know, when I write my story, unfortunately, I think I'm writing other people's too, because I think I started writing my kids' story. You know, because every single one of us talk about when I grew up or how, you know. So somewhere along the line, we've had influence for whatever we become. And I don't know, just that insanity alone, and that kept going on and on, and I was making tons of money. It was in a booming time. I had bought and sold several houses. I was all there. That was what I based everything in my life on, was that success, that financial security, those material things. That's what defined me. What kind of car I drove. You know, remember when I came here, I had that red Hummer? Oh, I was so embarrassed to go to the Lotto Club every day in that. You know, and people were looking at me like, really? You know? But, you know, again, I'm like those people there. I'm just like them. I might have a bigger, redder car than they do, but I'm the same inside. My last drunk was not my worst, and it wasn't my funnest, and it wasn't planned. And it started in the daytime. Something that I could tell you that I would brag about, like, I don't drink in the daytime. Only on vacation. On vacations, yes, of course I drink in the daytime. Everyone does. But that day I started drinking I had called my cousin and I said, what are you doing? She goes, oh, we're just sitting out here on the deck and we're having some whiskey and our coffee. Well, I said, well, you know what? I can do that. Went in there, poured me some Jack in my coffee, and I started on. And by 2:30, I was in a blackout. And I knew I had to go and get my grandson and take him to baseball practice. And I knew I couldn't drive. And that was a God thing. Because I will drive you. I will drive you drunk. I will drive anybody drunk that I could get in my car. You know, I drove my mother. I drove my children. I drove my grandkids. All my friends. I fight you. I used to get mad at one of my girlfriends, Nancy, because we'd go to the pump house about 3. Well, about 8, she's like, I call him a taxi. I go, what? I call him a taxi. I said, well, I'm not ready. The karaoke hasn't even started. You know, well, the taxi came, and I got in it. We went to just through the Carl's Jr. and the taxi right there, you know. Well, by the time we were through Carl's Jr.'s, I was getting mad at her even more. And I told that taxi driver to take me back to my car. I'm waking up in the morning with no car at home. Uh-uh, hell no. So anyway, that's the kind of drunk I was, you know. Where was I going with this? No.
Your last drunk.
Yes, my last one. Thank you. So, anyways, I was doing that in the morning, and by 2:30 it had the blackout, and I knew I couldn't drive. That was a God thing. Okay, I'm back. I called my girlfriend, and I said, hey, can you take me to go take Joseph to baseball? She goes, well, what's the matter? I said, well, I've been drinking. So she came and got me, and they were supposed to be gone. See, another God thing. They were going to leave on vacation, but her husband was running late. And she came and got me, and we went and picked Joseph up, and we took him over there to the ballpark, and I was crying on the way home, and I was telling her, you know, I'm going to quit, I'm going to get the money. She was like, yeah, get out, I got to go on vacation. And so I went in the house, and probably did a little more drunk driving. is what I'm thinking, because about 7:30, well, I opened the door, it was an old boyfriend, he had dinner. So I had to call him. You know? So that was fine. So he came in, and I'm sure I'm looking good, too, I'm sure. Anyway, then my daughter calls, and she goes, Mom, what happened today? And I go, what are you talking about? She goes, well, Joseph said that when I walked up to the ball, to the dugout, Joseph stood up and yelled, Mom, Mom, I think Grandma was drunk today because she had to have a driver. She was all lovey-dovey to me. And I am just so embarrassed, thinking, oh, my God, I can't never go to another ball game. Now, you know. Anyway, the next morning, I got up, and for some reason, I don't even know what it was, I got on the internet, and I thought, you know what, this has got to stop. I looked around in that house, I looked out in the yard, and I thought, this means nothing to me. I felt so empty on the inside, and so sad, so afraid. You know, because I thought I'd always done the right thing, and I'd always worked hard, and I, you know, blah, 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 and I think I was really honestly, to tell you the truth, trying to please my dad, trying to be something. And you know, he'd been dead since 1988. That's a crazy thing to do. Another one of those people-pleasing things that I could never accomplish. But at any rate, I got on the internet and I was looking at these places, and I knew I should get insurance, and I was looking, you know, and some of them looked really nice, and I'm thinking in my head, you know, I just need to get away, and I need to get a place more like a spa. I don't really know about the rehab thing. But I knew in the back of my head, so I kept calling these places. This one poor man, he goes, ma'am, I think you called me before. But I kept thinking, you know, I kept wanting to go down on the price. Shit. But I found this place, and it didn't look bad. And I could pay for that one cash, because the other copays were even more than that one. So it looked okay, you know. You could see the beach in the pictures, and they had all these things, you know, and it seemed fine. And so I couldn't, that was on a Tuesday. No, that was on a Wednesday. My days off were Tuesdays and Wednesdays. And so I thought, well, you know what, I can't leave until next Tuesday because I have to get my affairs in order, you know. And I did, and I had to tell my boss. And so the next day I went to work and I called him and I said, you need to come out here. I need to talk to you. And he came out and I said, you know, I'm going to have to go away. I'm going to have to go get some help for alcoholism. And he goes, I didn't know. I didn't know. I hid it well, you know. He goes, well, this is a good time for you to go. So just go take care of yourself and stay close to God. That was, I don't know, that really got me, coming from him, number one, and number two, I was about as far away from God as you could get. You know, I knew about God. I had used God before for things that I needed, for things that I wanted to change. And I had drank religiously a lot. And by that I mean, you know, I would go with the church people, and when they would go to lunch, they would say we could have a margarita, and that would be fine. Well, I didn't like the rules, you know. Anyway, it never worked for me. That religion never worked for me. I felt less than, out of place, unworthy, not right, you know. It wasn't my thing. So when he said that to me, it really struck a chord in me, you know. And I did feel like there was something that was a little bit like something letting go in me. You know, I don't know if that makes sense, but so I worked a week and got that all set up, and I headed to Laguna Beach. And I went there, and the man on the phone had said, if you come in here 72 hours sober, you won't have to go to detox. And it's $1,000 more if you go in there. And I'm thinking, okay. Well, that was on Wednesday. So the next week, when I was preparing myself to go, telling everybody and getting everything in order, I thought, 72 hours. Because I went to my friend's house on Sunday night, my drinking buddies, my next door neighbor drinking buddies. And they said, you don't mind if we're drinking, do you? And I said, oh no, go ahead. Doesn't bother me. So then I really started thinking, 72 hours. Sunday to Tuesday, how long is that? I was really trying to think if I could get one more in, you know? But thank God I couldn't do the math. So I just let it go, you know? I didn't do it, but... And I got down there, and it was funny, too, because, you know, one other bright idea I did towards the end of my drinking, I decided that, you know what, if I could smoke a little weed, it would probably help me feel better. Do you know what? It took me 10 days to get that weed. 10 days. And then I got it, and it wasn't rolled up. So then I'm thinking, how am I going to smoke this? I'm not going to go buy papers. Oh, my God, no. Somebody will see me. And so I decided to make one of those things out of a Coke can. Bended it, I take the holes in it, put the shit there, sucked it up. And then I was afraid that somebody was going to find that can. You know, it was all the crazy that we hear about people hiding their bottles and hiding their everything. And that's exactly what I was going through my mind. Oh, my God, the kids are going to be over here and pull these. I had those things that you pull out for your trash can in the cupboard. I'm going to have to go hide this can. Anyway, make a long story short, I still had some of that weed left when it was time to go down there to that rehab. And the people that were going to drive me from Bakersfield, I was going to there, and they were going to drive me down there and keep my car while I was in there and then come back and get me. Well, oh yeah, I forgot about this other part too, was one of my internet dating men. He didn't drink, but he smoked pot, so that was fine with me. And when he came, I had this weed. Well, he was nice enough to roll up what was left of it. So I stuffed that into this little bottle thing, and I took it to my people that were going to drive me. And I forgot to give it to them. It was stuck in the bottom of the back. And so they left after they dropped me off at the rehab, which we drove up there in front of his place, and we're kind of looking at each other, and she says, well, this is probably just where you do the paperwork, because it didn't look like the pictures. And I go, I don't know. And I hope maybe, I don't know. You know, it was, anyway, they took off with that weed unbeknownst in the back of that car, and I don't know, all kinds of things went through my head, and then they were freaking out because they thought I still had it on me, and they were going to go through my bags and find it. What were they going to do, throw me in jail and in the rehab? I don't think anything would have happened, but anyway, that was a funny story. That rehab experience for me was an eye-opener, let me tell you. I have never been away to college. I have never had a roommate. I have never not had my own stuff, okay? The bed was about as wide as a maxi pad. And there were two of them in the room with a width about this much room, you know, to walk, and it was hideous. And my roommate was 39 years old. She was an engineer with Caltrans from Eureka. And she was not a happy camper. And so, and I was the oldest. another eye opener. I think that was another God funny thing, because I was in there with all these kids that were so young, and they were just these brats that they'd been in rehab after rehab after rehab, and you could tell that their parents were just saying, okay, here, we need a break from you. Get over here for 30 days, you know, those kinds. Crying and whining. They didn't have their phones, and they didn't have their computers. They were just going on and on. Anyway, make a lot. I better hurry up and speed this up, or I'm never going to get sober. See, I told you. That went by quick, but I can tell you what, the first 4 days I was beat up. I didn't even take a shower. I stayed in my sweat, and I wanted my outsides to look like my inside felt. And when I finally showered, they came out for dinner. They didn't know who I was. You know, they were like, what? But that was an experience. And, you know, they laid the foundation for AA is what they did. We did have a personal trainer. We did have good food there. We did get to go and have some massages. Oh, that was funny. I'm not a big massage person, but, you know, came with a package. So I go into this place, and here's this little girl. She's about this tall. She's Vietnamese. And she lays me down on my stomach, and she gets up on top of me. She's pushy. And she's like, you very, very nice person. And she goes, but you've been very, very mean. And I am like, how does she know this? Really? I wanted to flip over and lock her out, but you know, what it really did was it made me start bawling like a baby. I don't know what she was doing, but she was telling me how my muscles and the tension and my kidneys and my body was full of toxins, she called it. And when she was done with me, I felt like a dish rag, man. I was. Couldn't even hardly walk, but yeah. We don't know what we do to our bodies. You know, I didn't really think I had any physical things wrong with me. I was never sick or anything like that. But I was puffed up. My eyes were always yellow. I don't know. It was not a good thing. You all know the feeling, I'm sure. Anyway, that experience down there went on, and it was really good, and it was just so humiliating to ride around that Laguna Beach in that druggy buggy with the boozer cruiser, they called it, and go to all those meetings, because down there, I mean, there's some high dollar meetings down there, and why they take us there, I don't know, but humiliation, I guess. I know my sponsors hate this when I say every time you go into a meeting until you get 30 days, you're going to stand up and say you're a newcomer. Because when I was down there, I had to stand up and say, I'm Debbie, I'm an alcoholic, because I was a newcomer. And then I had to say, again, I'm Debbie, I'm an alcoholic, I'm from Visalia. Because I was from out of town. Like they didn't know it. I rode in the bus, you know. Hello? Anyways, it taught me that I had a lot to learn. And the exit day was a little teeny tiny mini 4-step. How much can you know in 30 days? But that was the only way to get out of there. I just remembered on that thing that they kept calling me Rule 62. And I was like, what's that? What does that mean? That means I'm taking myself too serious. And I did take it serious. That's about the most serious thing that I've done. And the only thing I learned from that little deal, that mini forceps, was that I did not want to be that person on that paper. So I came home. My friends came and got me back to them. So we're about halfway home, and they say, do you mind if we smoke a joint? Now, they found the weed in the back, right? I go, well, people pleaser. That's okay. I'm in the back. I remember driving in that car down that freeway with my head out the window like a dog because I didn't want to smell that. And I think that was so rude. I have a resentment. Where's my sponsor? Try making it. But, you know, people are so inconsiderate, you know, sometimes, and we really have to put the importance in ourselves and what we need to do for our own sobriety, you know, and make this about us. It's not about anybody else. Got back home that night, pulled up into my front of my house, and I was so glad to be home, but I was glad to be back, not feeling like I did when I left. You know, and my neighbors had come in, my drinking neighbors had come in, and they had put food in my refrigerator, and there was plant on the counter, and everything, you know, in a card, and it was just a really, I don't know, I cried for a lot of days when I got back, because it was, I don't know why, I just did, you know, I felt so relieved in a way, but I was scared to death, because during my 30 years of drinking, I had tried about every 10 years there would be something I would stop or I would control it or I'd get back to church or I would try on my own. I knew I had a problem, but I was not going to admit it, you know, and really afraid. But I have a daughter that's in the program and she's about 10 months ahead of me. And I came back on a Wednesday, and the next night was Thursday, and I went to that Thursday night Methodist meeting there in Visalia, and y'all were so nice and friendly, and I was scared to death to go in that meeting because Shelley was the secretary. And in my head, I went, oh, these people know what a bitch I am, you know? And I found out that's not how it is here in Alcoholics Anonymous. We love each other, we care about each other, and the newcomer is the most important person in the room, and it's changed my life. You know, I have a God today that is so, so big, and I don't think there's anything in my heart or in my life that could replace the God I have. I think that's the most important thing in my life, and I'm really glad He's given me the life I've had, and I'm also trusting Him with the one that's to come. You know, I don't really think this journey is about becoming. I think it's about unbecoming. Unbecoming what I don't want to be, and becoming what God is going to turn me into. And as long as I trust Him and do the very best I can, to the best of my ability and my willingness. Stay close to the program, listen to you guys that have welcomed me and taught me through these times that I've been here, and you've seen me go through things, and you've seen my crazy town, and I do remember not to take myself so seriously. I have a lot of fun in here, you guys. If it wasn't for all you, I wouldn't stay. I would be an old lady drunk. That's exactly where I was headed, you know. And I don't know. I'm almost done. So with that, I will close and just say thank you to each and every one of you that helped me stay sober. And God bless you all. Thanks.